A62. Number 3A.
All right. So, the assignment, therefore, was to take the textbook and read those references on each synonymous term through, rather in a fluent, flowing way, just with one purpose in mind, to read those many, many references, and by the amount of references that one reads, to get into the tone of the synonymous term. How can one read through these references very quickly? Well, when they are spread all over the textbook. And so we were considering some technical aids last time, which I may perhaps repeat for the future. One possibility is that one takes the science and health and underlines, say, mind, the synonymous terms, and so by underlining you are much more in a position to go through the pages and see if there is a synonymous term on the page or not, and so get a more fluent reading. But then when one underlines mind, as one usually does with a pencil in black, when one comes to spirit, one suddenly feels, I can't underline that also in black, so perhaps you take various colors. If you do that and choose various colors, you have to be aware that you have stick to those colors all through your life. Because once you have got used to one, you react on the color, you know, very quickly, and when you go over your notes or the Bible or anything, the color indicates at once, oh yes, this is soul, oh yes, this is life. And you have to stick to those colors. So in a way, you can do it with colors, and so get the fluent reading. Or you use seven signs and health, and just take one signs and health for mind and another for spirit, soul, and so on. And the publishing house will be very grateful to you. They make good business in the future, I can see that. They will sell science and health by the millions, because each one is going to buy at least seven science and health. Well, that's another way, and also, you know, on the second-hand bookshop market, one always finds a lot of science and health. That's how we did it at home. They were always in demand. Also perhaps another technical help, when you have seven signs and health, and then perhaps you could do the following, that you write on at the margin the page number where the next reference appears. Say if you have mind, which may appear, I don't know, on page 8, and the next one on page 36, well then you write on page 8 at the margin 36, and then you know you don't have to go through all the pages until you come to the next reference. That's a very practical aid. Then the next aid naturally is that we have that scissor and paste job, which has been very helpful for most students who are here, that a student has put together through, I think you call it the scissor and paste job, all the references cut out from the textbook, put them together, and then afterwards xeroxed it, and most people like to work that way. Well, each one of these methods has its pros and cons. The point is that when one cuts it out, that perhaps one doesn't always quite see the surroundings of the synonymous term, because yesterday we have seen that no term has a value per se, that the value of every term is given through the surrounding, therefore through a relationship in which that term appears. But I guess that Cicero and Pei's job that you had was taking into consideration as much as possible this very need. Yes, so really if you have made your technical preparation for the study, the assignment therefore was read through these statements from time to time in a flow. And I would ask and say, do it also in the future. I do it too. I started doing that job way back in 37, 38, and I've gone through them at the beginning, in the first, say, 20 years, I guess two or three times a year through all the synonymous terms, and since then, perhaps I do it every year, I go through it just as I did in the first year. I just feel if we approach it always afresh and feel I can learn something still, that one doesn't feel, oh, now I know that, I know the synonymous term, I have done them over and over, I don't need them anymore, I know them now. I think then we close our mind, then it's no more the divine mind speaking to mind, but then it would be the divine mind trying to speak to a very closed human mind, and that doesn't work. And actually, this is the way that something new can unfold. We don't need to think that we know a lot about the synonymous term. Actually, we only have started knowing the seven synonymous terms. And I was always impressed by what I read about Einstein, why he was able really to suddenly to make that paradigm shift from the Newtonian physics to the relativity physics and the relativity theory, because he was thinking over hundreds of times Newton's laws. Those laws that were absolutely unrevocably or accepted by the world. They were accepted, they were not in question, but he questioned them. And it is said that he was thinking them over and over and over, just asking always, is it really taking in all the factors? Or is perhaps one factor not considered? And that factor was naturally time. And so you can see there is a great value in going over a subject that one already knows to a great extent. But to go over it, if it's fundamental, like the seven synonymous term, and go over it, but every time again with a sense, if I wouldn't know anything about it, and if I'm absolutely open to it, I wonder what I will find. I wonder what it will really reveal to me. And in this way, we will feel that this assignment will be an assignment that was not only for 1 year, but that would stand for the years, all the years to come. That's the point I wanted to bring out, and to bring out that there is a great treasure somewhere hidden away in the synonymous terms which we haven't touched. And actually, I must say that especially in the last seminar here, I became aware of something about the synonymous term I wasn't quite aware up to now, and which seems that it will help us to see those seven synonymous terms in a much more structured way than up to now. But I don't want to speak about it this year because it would go too far, but we may do that perhaps next year or so, where we can see that if we actually study those references with the mind of Christ, not with an attitude, oh, should I do them, shouldn't I do them, or Max said we should do them, you know. Well, this is not an attitude. Huh? Must be always that terrific attitude of expectancy. We always must be a mother that is expects a baby. Yes. Okay. Do you like to ask some questions about this assignment? If you have difficulty, you can bring it up now before we go to the next point. Yes?
Well, I want to ask the following question. Would it be possible that we would get all an assignment, let's say a very simple one, like that each one writes down 5 examples of, let's say, these compilations, that we all could get together and each verbalizes its own product in a way, and then by listening to each other, we develop some kind of a listening ear and certainty.
You mean a combination of...
Of what? A combination of...
From the textbook.
Just what you said now, this first section.
Yes.
Because...
From the textbook or from where?
Well, why not first just that we sit down and write 5 examples as well as we can, and then we double check.
Okay. All right, whoever likes to do that until this afternoon, can write down a few examples. Huh? Would be quite interesting. Yes, okay, let's do that now. Try to write out a simple statement in which the following combination appears. The action of truth. You know that action is what?
Mind.
All right, so it's a combination of mind and truth. Huh? Write out a statement which is correct about the action of truth. Second statement about the intelligence of love. Third one about the unfoldment of life. The fourth one, the harmony of soul. Fifth one, the law of, what didn't we have? The law of spirit. The law of spirit. These are combinations, make a short statement wherein this combination is right, is correct. Okay. We go further in the assignment, and we would actually come now to tonality building in point 2, and then in point 3 to consciousness building and being building. And after we had sent out this study syllabus, we felt that perhaps we should bring out more clearly and more systematically the assignment about these points. And so Denis Breton has drafted the guide for syllabus study 2, which I ask you now to consider. So take a guide for syllabus study 2. You have it in front of you. And you see that there are two great categories involved in it. Category A, the method for consciousness building. And on page 2, the category B, the self-reflection of being. Is that clear? There we are. Therefore, in the category A, which we want to consider now, that study guide shows in more detail what the assignment of point 2 and 3 asked for, namely the fundamental way of how we arrive at a consciousness of reality. Actually, this is our great aim, that reality becomes our consciousness, and so that we are not thinking about reality. As long as we think about reality, then reality is somewhere over there, and with our human mind, we think about something that is over there, and we have a great gulf in between our thinking and reality itself. So the great question is, how do we break down that gulf so that we are at one with reality and reality is one with us? And this is something that has to be cultured. This is not something that we just can think out. Naturally, we can talk about that we are one with God and that the divine mind is our mind and so on. But it's usually just stating it and thinking about it, and it isn't really a conscious consciousness that is just there, which we don't have to think about. So this is the great, great culturing trend, how to arrive at that consciousness of being itself. And so we have seen that the steps leading to it can be brought out in this category A through 4 different steps. 1, 2, 3, 4, which is concept building, then tonality building, consciousness building, being building. Now, I have to naturally state that these 4 steps are 4 steps that I didn't find as a teaching line in the textbook itself. The textbook doesn't say, now first you have to get the concept and then the tonality and then the consciousness and then it's your being. But it's something that one can now trace back when one looks back retrospectively from where we have been coming. So, looking back on the whole development which was ordered, one can see in it a definite line that is of a general law, a general order, and therefore is applicable, so to say, to every student, because there is a logic in this development. The logic in it is given through these 4 steps, namely that before one can have a spiritual consciousness of something, that the very first requisite is that we first have a perfect concept about something. That therefore our thinking is somehow channelized and purified into such a way that the concept of reality is purified to the point where it becomes more or less perfect. Therefore, it is a exercise that has a lot to do with correct thinking. We appeal here first to thinking. And this, we know that human thinking and human reason is the best human qualities, and we should make use of that. We should not neglect that, because we know that the mystic would go about in a completely different way. The mystic would say, all that is necessary is that we have the consciousness of being, of reality, and that what we have to do is to drop all our thinking. So the mystics say, let's drop all our reasoning and drop our thinking, so that somehow we are empty for the divine consciousness to take over. Well, in a way this is quite inducive, so to say, but it has one snag in it. Namely, how can we drop all false thinking if we don't know what is false and what is right? There must be somehow a standard, a guide, that tells us what is right thinking and what is wrong thinking. What are facts and what are counterfeits? What is truth and what is error? Therefore, a science, as Mrs. Eddy uses it, will first use our ability to think correctly and to use reason and logic in order to purify our thinking. And only then, afterwards, we can go a step further. So, let's see that we start at the right point. We don't start with inspiration. We don't start with meditation. We don't start with a mystical sense. We don't start with a religious sense, with an emotional sense. We start really by clarifying our thinking, our concepts. So, concept building has a lot to do with bringing our thinking into line with the divine. Therefore, Mrs. Eddy uses the term thinking quite a lot in order to show that thinking must be purified and brought in line with the divine. And only then, when, and this is the point, when a concept is so purified by checking what belongs to that concept, what does not belong to that concept, only by that purification of the human, of the concept, we come to what Mrs. Eddy calls the perfect concept. That love forms the perfect concept. And when that state is arrived, we can say, this is now of the nature of idea. Here we find the bridge from concept and from thinking to the point of the nature of idea. Now, why? So let's go back to what we said yesterday. Why do we arrive through clarifying a concept to the point of idea? What did we say we have to do? We said that every term has no value by itself. Therefore, a term, a concept, has no value of itself. It only has value in its environment. Or we said it has only value by seeing it reflected through every other idea. Didn't we say that? That in the spiritual language, therefore, we can take a concept like intelligence. We can look up what Webster says about intelligence. What we'll find there, that perhaps the big Webster will have a whole page on trying to define what is meant by intelligence. And we'll find that every faculty of science uses the term intelligence in a different way. And because Webster has to be so that it can be used generally, they bring in every way the term is used, until when you have read the whole thing, you don't know what intelligence is. There are so many definitions then. Many of the definitions perhaps will be contradictory, because many terms are used in very different ways. And so the human concept that is given through the ordinary language just is of no help to us. It may be right to get the first inkling of what the term may mean, but then we have to take that concept away from the dictionary and put it into the Dictionary of Science and Health, which defines then a term through all the other ideas, and will tell us that intelligence, say, is spiritual and not material, that intelligence is unchangeable and does not change, that intelligence has self-acting spiritual power and therefore does not need to be brought into action, that intelligence is eternal, deathless, that intelligence is dominion, that intelligence is always complete and fulfilled and knows its own infinite plan. And so in this way we begin to define, through the blending of ideas, define every concept. And as we do that through the blending, define a concept, we come to the point where we can see, if I can see a term in the blending of all the ideas of all the seven synonymous terms, then I get the perfect concept, I get the perfect definition through science and health, and then I know what is meant by the idea called intelligence. Because at that point, that concept has lost all its human limitations. It lost all those connotations which the Webster Dictionary would have put on it, which the human concept puts on it. We free, so to say, the human concept here, say, of intelligence from all its restrictions, so that it has only the unrestricted, the infinite meaning of intelligence as an idea of mind. Do you see that? That therefore, what we do all through this week, blending, 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 we just train ourselves in blending, blending, blending. We really get to know the new language, but that new language starts with concept building. We have to get first the true, the divine concept, and not the human concept of the terms. If we get the divine concept, then it becomes idea. Okay.